Hey, it's Tony Bruschi, and this is our Week in Review. Over the weekend, taking a look back at some of the most compelling conversations and stories that we've covered for you of the last week. Brand new episodes back Monday morning, bright and early, 5 a.m. here on the podcast.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi.
Featuring author, psychologist, and daily contributor, Siobhan Scott.
Mr. Heerman's adult children, they have not spoken to him in almost 2 months since the arrest. The attorneys say that it was too soon to say if they plan to maintain a relationship with him in the future. And that's extremely understandable. I guess my question to you would be, how often do family members stand by, or maybe not even just stand by, but maintain some type of relationship with the person that was a loved one for such a long period of time, was a father figure, was a husband? Because obviously Heerman wasn't a serial killer to these people. If he was, then that would be the shock of a lifetime. But it appears that he was dad and that he was a husband. How do family members reconcile that sort of thing and then move forward? Is it healthy for them to maintain some sort of relationship for their own well-being, like one would maintain with maybe a parent that is narcissistic or something, and you're just doing it more for yourself to be a good son or be a good daughter? Does that apply in a case like this when someone has done such or being accused of doing such horrendous things?
I think most of the time in these really horrendous cases, I think the family members do a complete cutoff just for their own emotional survival. Now, it's really rough to try to reconcile the person that I thought was my loving father, or at least my father to some degree, you know, whether I don't know how loving these guys always are. But to try to reconcile that and to continue to be able to hold those two realities separate, that's really hard for people to do. And I think most of the time it's probably healthier for them to just, you know, get lots of support for their own mental health, but to move on and just cut the ties. Now, that doesn't mean if somebody has a need to go visit at some point and to try to talk it through, you know, I certainly wouldn't discourage that, but it's something I don't think most people are able to do.
Do the people like Rex Heerman, do they have anything to offer if one has a need to try and talk something through? Does it ever make sense to go back and have a conversation, not about murder, but about interpersonal things with family? Because once, obviously, you find out someone has done this, it kind of taints everything that they have ever done, because this is the person who's capable of this sort of love over here, but capable of this sort of evil over here. It certainly, you know, it lingers in to the part that wasn't so negative. Is there ever anything that, is it ever a good thing to maintain that? I guess it'd be my question.
Yeah, there are going to be differences with every situation. And so I can't say that it would never be maybe healing for somebody to make that attempt. And would it be possible? I can't say I've seen it happen. And I don't know that it would be helpful. Now, in some cases, an adult child or a spouse may go back and have a conversation that could be therapeutic, but it would be more along the lines of, you know, I am completely aghast that I never knew you, you know, so to sort of discuss through and process the horror that they felt. You know, would there be a good outcome from doing that? I can't say that I've seen that happen. Sure. Is it possible? It could happen. But again, I don't think for most people that's something that they want to do.
The South Carolina case that they're looking into, connecting it possibly to Heerman. And I should note that as of this recording, some authorities have recently said, we don't really have anything super strong here. And I'm just paraphrasing, but there is a lot of evidence that does look suspicious. And one of the most, I think, intriguing pieces is that some of the family of Julia Ann Bean, who say they saw Heerman back in 2017, the daughter of Julia saying that she immediately recognized Heerman when she saw a photo of the suspected killer. She said, I have chills. I've seen him. That was the last man I saw with her personally. How accurate is that statement when coming from someone who's been through a lot of trauma? I mean, her mother missing, murdered, and you, of course, want to find the killer. You want to figure out who did this. And then suddenly there may be a suspect here. How much of that phrase should be, I've seen him before, or I want this to be the person I've seen before?
Mm-hmm. I would certainly pay close attention to it. But on the other hand, we do know that eyewitness statements to murders are notoriously unreliable. You know, people will believe that, you know, we see these with the people that have been unjustly convicted of murder based upon an eyewitness statement that, yes, this is the person. They pick them out in a lineup. And it turns out 20 years later, after the person has been incarcerated, DNA evidence comes out and it's like, oh, this wasn't the person. And then they find that the person was someone else who looks similarly. You know, so we don't know. I'd say it's 50-50 at this point. It's certainly possible that this is the man that she saw, but it could also be that, you know, our memories can play tricks on us, and that's true for everybody.
Sure. How much of the accounts of Huerman will play into the judgment that is made against him when it comes to an actual trial by a jury, if in fact we make it that far? Accounts like what we've heard from his workplace, where Huerman would like to hire petite women that very much fit the description of the alleged victims. That's very specific of only who he would hire. It wasn't that there was a one in the office. That was who he would hire. And is talking about going bear hunting and enjoying lying in wait, almost trying to gross out or get a shock into his employees, where he apparently more than once would gleefully describe the process of dressing the game, meaning, you know, taking the animal apart and delighting in grossing out the employees. Does that show more of a pattern of behavior or some desires that are kind of deep and dark and down? Or would that be something that connects as much as maybe on the surface we like to think it would?
You know, I would think that sort of thing would be really relevant to a psychologist doing a thorough evaluation of his personality, because it does say a lot about him. To what extent that would be allowed in court as evidence, I don't know. I would question how much of that would be considered, you know, appropriate testimony, but it's certainly relevant to his psychology. Everything that you mentioned is.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast.
Want more? Start binging on all of our true crime podcasts right now through Apple Podcasts and get an ad-free experience when you sign up to be a True Crime Today Premium Plus member exclusively on Apple Podcasts.
More of the Hidden Killers podcast dropping soon.
Press subscribe now.